cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck on Bloomberg Radio.
It is Global Recycling Day, and on that, Bloomberg's Leslie Kaufman writing at the start of 2024 this year, here's what she said. It is no secret that recycling in America is broken. The Environmental Protection Agency estimates that the U.S. has a combined recycling rate of only 32% for materials including glass, plastic, cardboard, and paper. That figure reflects collections from industrial, commercial, and residential trash.
Not great news. Mm-mm. Not
no,
great numbers.
Doesn't feel good.
We're spending the rest of the program talking a little bit about what's going on, at least the next two guests who are with us, about what happens in the world of sustainability. First up is Tony Parada of PA Consulting. His broad area of focus is on sustainability economy, and the organization works with companies and industries. He joins us from Westport, Connecticut. Tony, good to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. When you hear 32% when it comes to materials like glass, plastic, cardboard, and paper, that's from the EPA. Obviously not surprising to you because you work in this space. How do you think we get that number higher?
It's a massive opportunity. There's a number of ways that we can work together to get that number higher. First, technology, better mechanical recycling practices leveraged by AI and robotics. Second, new recycling methods are coming on the scene. Things like chemical recycling that go beyond just mechanical recycling. And finally, what we're most excited about is a move away from plastics altogether into alternative materials. As low as those recycling rates are, it does represent opportunity, both for enhanced collection, but also a new world and a new horizon of new materials.
Well, Tony, you know what's interesting too, and I always feel like when there's money to be made, people kind of can go and do the right thing, or you know, tax policy can also make us do the right thing. What is it, though, mm-hmm. that moves the needle the most, you know, in terms of sustainability initiatives, at least in your world, what you've seen that really kind of moves people, company, industries to do the right thing?
In the world of materials like plastics and aluminum and glass, what we've seen, especially here in the U.S., is a bottle return deposit system does a lot to move recycling rates upward. So here in the U.S. and in my hometown of Connecticut now, we just raised the redemption rate from 5 cents to 10 cents. It's been unchanged for the better part of three decades. So that was a major move. Bills and initiatives like that do an immense amount to be able to increase the collection of those materials.
Is it kind of a waste of time for us to be talking about the consumer end of this? Doesn't so much of this happen on the industrial side of this stuff?
I would agree. If you take the mentality of I have a problem to solve, do I want to convince 3 billion individuals to quote unquote do the right thing? Or would I prefer to convince 1,000 companies to change the way in which they go to market?
Well, what are the regulations around companies? Because it seems like that really is what moves the needle with this stuff.
Regulation is definitely the tip of the spear. There's been a lot of talk around extended producer responsibility and the cost that firms will incur as a result of manufacturing and producing these items. But again, major opportunity for the companies that get it right. At the end of the day, sustainability is, in essence, talking about using resources properly and that allocation of those resources. It means better business.
Hey, Tony, how has the recent news from the SEC and Chair Gary Gensler had an impact? I'm thinking about the SEC now forcing companies to disclose their greenhouse gas emissions for the first time, but we should point out watered down a key requirement after there was some heavy lobbying from industry groups. But this alone, how might it change kind of the story and the impact and move us to a much more sustainable world?
Well, I think the story that we've seen unfold for the past 10 years is there is a real embracing of this concept, in particular by the capital markets. So the lack of a climate action plan inside a company is the lack of a business continuity plan. It makes you less investable. So by embracing the notion of sustainability, greenhouse gas emission, and being transparent in that data collection in your activity, in essence, as a leader of an organization, you're helping make your firm a more investable asset class, and you're future-proofing your own business.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about other issues that we've talked about on our program when it comes to sustainability. And a lot of that has to do with sort of the effects that we're living with each and every day because of decisions that have been made in you know, production over the last 50 to 100 years. We talk about single-use plastics and the idea that we're starting to see microplastics show up in places that we do not want them in. We talk about PFAS, these so-called forever chemicals, tainting water streams and the water that we're drinking just from the tap in certain areas. How do you think about all this stuff, Tony, and ways to kind of like, I don't know, keep yourself safe?
So it's clear to a large number of us that the amount of plastic that we're producing at scale is just untenable. On top of that, to your well-made point, the medical community is stepping in and every week discovering more and more places that plastics in particular show up. What is heartening and promising is a whole raft of new technologies coming onto the landscape. So things like seaweeds and alginates and plant-based fibers are being used to replace plastics in particular. You've got companies like NotPLA. They won an Earthshot Prize late last year. PA actually helped them with their initial technology. We're seeing a whole revolution in the world of plant-based fibers. There's a technology called Pulpak where they're using fibers to replace plastics of all kinds. So as disheartening as one may see some of the data look like, there are immense opportunities to be had and new technologies coming onto the marketplace every day.
Right. How quickly, though, can it change the needle? Like, I totally get into it. Bloomberg, very involved in the Earthshot Prize, as you know. You know, but I still am surrounded by a lot of plastic. And if I go to buy anything, there are certain aisles in supermarkets and various stores that all it is plastic containers. So how do we, you know, I talked about Gensler, SEC Chair Gensler. I mean, a lot of lobbying, and these are, whether it's the petroleum industry, the plastics industries, I mean, spend a lot in terms of lobbying. Their survivability is at stake, some would say. So how do you ultimately move that needle?
I would offer one example that just dropped last week, Keurig, the coffee company. They disrupted the world of coffee years ago with a single serve pod. We all get to choose the flavor and the style and the amount we want in our homes. They just launched last week in the US a new product called the K-Round. Mm-hmm. It's basically a plastic-free coffee capsule that you can use in your home without the need for using plastics or aluminum. It's that type of innovation that will not only solve the material and the waste side of it, but I expect that to be a huge commercial and consumer success.
Wait, these are the ones you don't have to send these back to recycle, right?
No, it's literally a pressed coffee pod that's coated in a non-plastic coating. You drop that pressed coffee pod into Keurig's new machine, and you get the same amazing experience that we all come to know and expect, just without all the extra packaging.
Hallelujah.
But, you know, there's some stuff that you just feel like can't be made in a sustainable way, like Legos, the things I step on every day.
Tony, do you have a solution? 30 seconds left. Do you have a solution for something like Legos?
For Lego, not yet. But we should have those folks call PA and we can help them. The medical industry is moving more sustainably. That's another key area that's been problematic for safety reasons and regulatory.
Yeah.
But again, technology is here to save us. There's a lot of amazing discoveries on the horizon.
So when I really hurt myself on the Lego, I will be given a medical solution that
and
will
say,
not.
You say sugar? Sugar?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Shoot.
That's what you say when you step on a Lego.
Those things really, really, really hurt. Tony, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Certainly a space that we care about, and it's great to get some time with you. Tony Parada, he is sustainability and regenerative economy expert at PA Consulting, joining us from Westport, Connecticut. Those things hurt.
To be fair, they have been trying to make them more sustainable. They can't figure out any way to make, my understanding is they can't figure out a way to make them with a material that's not plastic that has the same precision.
No, I get it, right?
Yeah.
And so that it's still a toy that kind of works. All right, more to come, folks. This is Bloomberg.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Well, there are a few certainties in this world, Carol.
Yes.
Death, taxes, and the styrofoam cup that you pour your hot water into when you make cup noodles ramen.
Totally get it.
We've all been there.
We've all.
Boil that water, pour it in the cup, get yourself some noodles.
Staple in college.
Yeah. Who didn't survive on this stuff in college or at
we
some
all
point,
did.
Right?
We all did, totally.
Well, I'm talking about it because it turns out that after all these years, cup noodles is finally getting rid of that polystyrene foam cup and releasing a microwavable paper cup. I've actually got it in my hands right now because Brian Huff is CEO and president of Nissin Foods USA. It's the maker of cup noodles. He's here with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. Brian, good to have you here. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for joining us. So first question, what took so long? Because we haven't been using this type of material in things for a long time.
You know, as we were looking at our business, and we obviously have had that styrofoam cup since 1973 when we started producing in California. So we continue to look to evolve the brand, to evolve the business. You know, and certainly the cup and the packaging is a big part of the brand. So we want to continue to lead in this space. And it was a great time for us to start to look at alternate materials, not only, you know, from a sustainability perspective, but also now it's microwavable.
Yeah, so was it a concern? Did it take so long to make the change because you were concerned about changing the brand? And forgive me, I know you've only been at the company for a few months, so you can't speak to totally the history of it, but I'm just curious, you know, it's why a change like this comes now versus 20 years ago?
I think a big part of it was finding the right materials. So, you know, it's not as easy as just moving from where you were to paper in terms of how that product and that experience you have are. But secondarily is retooling our entire manufacturing process to be able to deliver something like this to the marketplace, which was a significant investment for us, but we think the right thing to do for the business and the brand.
Well, you know, and to be fair, like you said, only a few months at this company, but you were at Kellogg's for 24 years.
I was.
Like, you understand this consumer packaged goods space in a big way. You've worked at several different companies. I'm never quite sure what the margins are on these things, but to change packaging, like, what is it that in general kind of why it takes a while to make some changes in it? Is it like to help walk us through it?
Well, I think ultimately, especially a large consumer packaged goods companies, they're built on efficiencies and effectiveness. So our manufacturing plants are manufacturing about 900 cups per line per minute. So to be able to make a change, to have to shut down the lines, retool the lines, in this particular case, almost 7 weeks of not producing on our manufacturing lines to be able to retool and rebuild the lines to convert from styrofoam to paper. So it's a pretty big undertaking.
So you have two factories here in the U.S., two facilities that make these. When you were retooling them, how do you make up for the factories that are shut down?
Well, ultimately, we move from a five-day schedule to a seven-day schedule, 24/7.
Sleep on the factory floors like Elon would do.
as you can imagine, and building up inventory and making sure we've got the right inventory levels around the country, pulsing the business as we could to make sure that we could make this move effectively and continue to service our customers.
And fair to say that the decision and the change was in effect or in process before you joined the company?
It was, yes. Yes.
But in general, I guess what I'm trying to understand, because you are someone who understands though this space and have been in it for a long time, Brian, is that consumers, you and I talk about it all the time, Tim, and I know it, I've got a daughter who's about to be 21, and just like the importance of understanding what a product stands for, the materials, the impact on the environment, this is not a new discussion. So I'm just trying to understand, like, when does a company like Nissan or somebody else finally decide, okay, it's time for us to change this product because either consumers care or some other dynamic or financially it finally makes sense?
Yeah, and I think the way you suggest it makes perfect sense. It takes a while for you to continue to read what that consumer is saying.
Is it really But is it consumer-based that ultimately makes you guys make the change?
Well, I mean, I think it's consumer-based. Sometimes it's company-based as well and what your company's values and mission are. So our company is doing business in about 100 countries. And I would say that in some countries, they're much more progressive
like
in
Europe?
Terms of sustainability. Europe is a big one. So Europe is leading in this particular space, and the U.S. is probably behind. In a lot of these different packages and packaging types. So for us as a global company, we spend a lot of time looking at our global footprint, looking at potential regulation that may happen over time, and for us wanting to be a leader in the space.
Talk to us, we're Bloomberg, so we like numbers here.
Sure.
Publicly held company, based in Japan, about more than $8 billion market cap at this point.
Yep.
Here in the U.S., how big of a market is it for your products versus other countries? I mean, how important of a market is the U.S. for Nissan?
It's becoming more significant every year, but the ramen category globally is almost $50 billion. So it's a very, very large category internationally and globally. Domestically, about $3 billion. So a sizable food category here in the U.S. And, you know, we are starting to be a material part of the overall organization in the U.S.
That means that $3 billion, does that include CPG and restaurants?
It does not include restaurants.
So this
is just retail.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that is pretty big.
All right. So I'm going to go there because I kind of asked you about it. So when do we get the sodium down? 50%. Like I talk about what consumers want. Again, a younger, you know, whether it's my daughter or other people, like are looking at these things and being like, oh, wow. Like taking a second thought. I didn't really think about it so much in college.
Did not cross my radar.
But I mean, and I know you said you guys are working on it.
We are. And there's a lot of good technology out there in terms of reducing sodium without lessening taste, right? So a big part of this is we are a product that is consumed each and every day,
yeah.
Right? And consumers vote. And a lot of what they vote on is not only nutritionals, but it's also taste. So you have to have both. So we've got a global team in R&D. We also have a domestic team in California that's continually looking at the new technology of how that sodium hits your taste buds, how you can simulate a higher level of taste and flavor and reduce the sodium, and something that we continually operate and work on. And the product has gotten much better over time,
right.
And will get much better in the future. But that's a great question.
Talk a little bit about product category in the U.S. and like the most popular products. I'm holding a, for people listening on radio, Cup Noodles Chicken.
I'm really
yes.
hungry.
I feel
and
like
if I had hot water.
Yeah, if you had hot, you don't need hot water. You just need
hungry.
Water.
We've been on air for a couple of hours. We always
well,
get hungry around
there's
now.
Hot water upstairs.
I know,
you can
I
go
know.
Get some.
We love that, by the way, so thank you.
But is this the flagship product, the chicken cup noodles
chicken
in
cup
Nissan's
noodle
category?
Chicken is the flagship, absolutely.
What portion of revenue does that account for the company, for U.S. sales?
I want to say U.S., it's about 40% of our
wow.
total.
Wow.
That
that's
one
amazing.
Brand. Now, there's multiple the one, products within that brand,
oh,
but that's
was,
total brand. Not
okay,
just
total
chicken.
Brand, not just chicken flavor.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
So it's and then the top ramen category too is certainly a big one for you.
Another huge category
yeah.
for us and great brand.
And
for
that's
us.
Sort of almost the remainder because
yes.
when I was struck by looking at the website how much the products haven't changed in a long time. They're still the classic products, which says okay, wait a second, there is that loyalty here.
There certainly is. And
it's there's certainly other flavors. Don't
get
me wrong.
And it's an iconic brand. And as we innovate, we want to continue to keep innovating, too, on our traditional and our original, which in this particular way, we looked at packaging as a way that we continue to deliver new news and innovation.
That's what I was going to go to, right? We spent so much time talking about the tech world and the tech community and innovation, disruption. How do you guys think about it in the food space, what it means for you, where it is a well-known brand, kind of iconic if you think about it.
Carol, there's a fan store where you can buy a Cup Noodles trucker hat and a Cup Noodles beanie.
Very cool, by the way. I should have brought one with me.
Yes, you should
We're here next time, Carol, okay?
But
I might get you some Top Ramen socks, okay?
Just got about 45, 50 seconds left.
Oh, those are sold out. I'm sorry.
All right, stop. What's innovation or disruption for you guys as you think about this space?
You know, what we look at is when on a three-year rolling basis, about 15% of our revenue actually coming from innovation. So we're continuing to look at other premium spaces that we can go, more different and unique ingredients, certainly authentic Asian.
Yeah.
And hotter flavors today
yeah.
are big sellers. So it is a constant investment that we're making in innovation and truly is the future growth of the business.
We'd be remiss. We usually start this way. 20, 25 seconds. You are CEO of Nissin Foods here in the States and so on and so forth. How would you describe the global market environment, the economy right now?
I think the economy is really challenging. I think there's a lot of mixed signals as it relates to the economy, but consumers today, especially in the U.S., are continuing to be, are hurting. So for us, we have seen some different changes in our channel mix. So we see more people moving to the value channels, the clubs and the dollar stores. We've got a big business in the value channel or dollar stores across the country. So we've certainly seen some of that migration. And we believe part of that is the economic conditions in the U.S.
That's fascinating. Great stuff. We covered a lot of ground. Brian, thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you both.
Same here. Safe travels home. Brian Huff, he's CEO and President of Nissin Foods USA, joining us here in studio.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.